Throughout the 1950s and into the early 1960s, this parish produced a bumper crop of ordinands and had a steady succession of curates. These were salad days for the church. The baby boomer generation was sent to Sunday school in large numbers. Parishes generated a wide variety of parachurch organisations, ranging from harrier clubs to drama clubs to the usual youth clubs, choirs, mothers' union, etc. Lay people could spend almost every night of the week attending these clubs, thus living in a total denominational world in which the Anglican version of Christian religion was subtly infused and reinforced at many points. The surrounding culture was also kind to the church. There was a tacit background acceptance of the Christian foundations of a fairly homogeneous society. All of this helped to nurture the vocations of not a few young men who idealistically set out on a lifetime's adventure of total Christian commitment. It's a sobering discovery then to track the vocational history of this band of brothers who went forth into the parishes and chaplaincies of the Anglican world. The winnowing fan of discouragement, of repeated disappointments and of personal calamities persuaded quite a few of these newly minted priests to give up the ministry and to go out and do something else with their lives. It was also the case that New Zealand culture and society was going through profound changes that were no longer to the church's advantage. Increasingly, the animators of parish life were swimming against the tide instead of going with the grain of a sympathetic and supportive social background. I want to be clear and fair about this. In every generation of the church's life, no matter whether it is encountering strong headwinds or being pushed along by helpful tailwinds, there will be those of its recently ordained clergy who find that this is not the life for them, that they are square pegs and round holes who are not temperamentally suited for this demanding vocational path. They are doing the right thing if they leave the ministry in a quiet and dignified manner. But there are others who could and should have gone the distance, yet who lack the stickability to do so. Their departure raises questions about the foundations on which their ministry was based and on their capacity to renew the fire in their bellies in each successive season of their lives. What is true of the clergy applies also to our laity. I have no doubt that practically everyone in this church this morning could call to mind people they knew well who turned out to be God's fair-weather friends who are not with us anymore. Some will have taken offence at liturgical changes or irritating clergy, but mostly the surrounding anti-faith miasma of scientism and differentism and aggressive secular humanism have taken their toll. They decided to merge into the background and go with the flow. Today's gospel reading has been called the possibility of failed discipleship. It goes to the heart of why some give the game away while others box on through thick and thin. Two Sundays ago, the theme was go all out to get in. We heard about the assumption of Jesus that he expects wholehearted participation and complete commitment from his followers. You can't just drift along in an easy-ozy manner and expect to receive salvation with the rations. This morning, he comes at this issue from a different angle. Given that our Christian walk is to consist of a full-blooded discipleship, that we are to be the committed cadre of the Jesus movement, there's a considerable cost involved, and it might be a good idea to sit down and have a careful think about whether we can go the distance, whether we've got what it takes before starting out on the adventure of a lifetime. He then proceeds to lay out the possible hindrances that might sabotage your Christian walk and generate the possibility of you becoming a failed disciple. Undue attachment to money and possessions is a biggie. Luke is very hot on this. He thinks that your attitude to money and possessions is an infallible indicator of where you stand with God. The Presbyterian minister of Maori Hill put this in an amusing way recently. Speaking of some of his fringe parishioners, he said, "Three cars in the garage, the crib in Central, and the winter holiday in Hawaii, why would you need God?" Of course, the other side of this is that you can be obsessed with money and possessions in an ungodly manner when you are poor and can't stop thinking about these things. Here in South D, we are unlikely to face the spiritual dangers confronting millionaires, but we can become resentful about missing out on the affluence we see advertised all around us, and then become preoccupied with ways and means to get our hands on the good things of life. Another possible hindrance to active discipleship is an undue attachment to family. This is one of the most difficult parts of the Christian worldview to take on board. Who of us wouldn't be prepared to make considerable personal sacrifices to secure the best interests of kith and kin who we love? Our children represent our DNA flung forth into the future. Our parents who gave us the gift of life deserve our respect and our care and concern. In fact, we're mandated to do that by one of the Ten Commandments. Yet this morning, we heard a clear clarion call to beware of the ties that bind. Jesus was inclined to exaggerate to make a point. We're not supposed to hate our families. They deserve our love and respect. Yet when push comes to shove, we are to put the requirements of the Jesus movement ahead of our families. We are not to make a god of our personal attachment relationships. They are important, but they are not to be the be-all and end-all of our lives. In heaven, anyway, all of these relationships will be relativized. It's beginning to sound like a validation of the Catholic view of the priority of priestly celibacy or an endorsement of the religious life, isn't it? Yet these words apply to all of us, no matter what our state of life. The take-home message is, in the words of one commentator, the need to be disencumbered in order to have the necessary freedom to live out the reality of discipleship. It's also about the reality that being a Christian is a high commitment business, not a minor add-on to our life to be indulged from time to time. And it's about the reality that cross-bearing is an inescapable part of being a Christian. Jesus uttered these bracing words to the crowds accompanying him on his final journey to Jerusalem. They are enthusiastic about the inspiring words and impressive deeds they've seen him do. It's rather like the salad days of the church experienced in the 1950s. It's easy to be a follower of Christ when it's a popular option and the encouraging background factors make it a go-with-the-flow option. But when the going gets tough, as it surely did for Jesus, and as it has for us in this wintry season of the church's life, then we find out who his true friends are and who has the capacity to see it through to the end. Many of the crowd melted away when it became clear what was about to happen. They had been warned, and so have we. Finally, a word about the whole hogger youthful commitments we make to Christ in the enthusiastic days of our youth. Michel Coist was a French priest whose autobiographical and very personal books of prayers were popular in the 1960s and 70s. In one of them, a priest sits in his darkening church at the end of a long and tiring day's ministry and can hear the cheerful sounds of people going about their ordinary and less costly lifestyles. He feels his aloneness, his discouragement, and the temptation to walk away from it all and get himself a bit of love. He says to himself, "What a man gives and vows to God in the enthusiasm of youth, his adult life tries to take away from him bit by bit, day by day, in the years that follow." For Coist and for us, it is a question of counting the cost, of weighing up the sacrifices required, and of ensuring that our Christian discipleship is established on firm foundations that can endure in the storms of life. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.